Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library. First, a message from the disembodied spirit of our delightful sound man, Chris, who not only works for the Midnight Library, he's also written a book.
Hi there, I'm Christopher, and when I'm not adding stomach-churning sound effects to the Midnight Library, I write books to line its ornate shelves. My debut novel, called Nothing Works, Everything Happens, is a collection of science fiction short stories in which I try to understand why modern life feels so overwhelming, absurd, lonely, and sometimes, if you look hard enough, still worth the trouble. If you like thoughtful stories with a little existential dread humming in the background, you can find out more at aiasaya.com. That's A-I-Y-A-S-A-Y-A. Back to the podcast.
Madam, I heard a rumor in town that the sheriff's son is to be among the visitors tonight. Shall I prevent that?
Oh, let's live a little and have some fun with him, shall we?
Certainly. He's a DARE officer. Did you know?
Irma is far too young to be in such a program, and I will not have him trying to recruit her.
Damn straight. I'll move the hat rack and contact the Rat King.
Damn straight. Good evening. Welcome, everyone. Yes. Mr. Hopkins, Jr. You're the sheriff's son. Yes. Yes. Please hang your coat on this coat rack over here. This special one over here with the copper knobs on it. It's so special. There you go. Not you, Mr. Jackson. Your coat can go over here on this rack with the handmade oak knobs that Stefan made. This rack is much better suited to the type of material your lovely coat is made from. Trust me, Mr. Jackson. I'm so pleased to see you. Everyone, please pass by the hospitality tray and make your selections as you choose your favorite spot in the reading room. Oh, we have so much to get to this evening. Oh, yes, Miss Jen. How wonderful to have you back with us. Yes. The reading is on cursed belongings, yes. The offerings on the hospitality tray, are they cursed? No. Oh, no, not at all. The cart it's being pushed along on is in question. It might be. But not the food. This time. How intuitive of you, Miss Jen. I was about to mention the possibility of this very thing. Please cuddle up with Pussifer in the window seat, won't you? If she's agreeable. Welcome to the Midnight Library, everyone. I am your unholy host, Miranda Merrick. My word. First, let me say how simply divine your presence is, and that it's a joy and an honor to have you here, and how much effort we are pleased to put into keeping you safe. Unfortunately, there may be happenings that are beyond our control. You understand. Also, much of it is in our control. So, just be aware of that. Now, as you may already know, tonight's reading is on the subject of cursed objects. And this has prompted the prying question about the possibility that the Midnight Library may contain any such items. Now, let me assure you, we're positively overrun with them. I mean, a house this old, this size, with its entire history being stuffed with unusual people, family members, and each one being fiery in their own nature and overly protective of their possessions. Some long after their supposed deaths. Well, we're just inundated with conceivably cursed this, haunted that, and bewitched doodads all over the place. Allegedly. As our lawyers, Snively and Whiplash, have advised us to clarify. Let us begin. My lovelies, I'm sure I'm not telling you anything new by stating that curses have been with us since humans developed the skill to write them down, or to carve them into stone thousands of years ago. What you may not have known, or at least considered, is just how many kinds of curses there are. Let me briefly differentiate just a few for you. There are, of course, curses placed on tombs and graves, because ever since we've been putting our loved ones and ourselves into graves, we've been determined to deter others from robbing or disturbing us. These curses promise to the tomb breaker a life of misery and misfortune, and often an early and terrible death to be visited upon them. And most profoundly, some early curses, like that from the tomb of Penuit of Aniba, informs any transgressor that if they disrupt the interred's final rest, that they will pay forever by being tortured even in their afterlife. There are compelling Roman curses called defixiones, stemming from around the 5th century BCE. These brutal little beauties were curses that were etched onto stone tablets or scribed onto wet pottery or rectangles of lead, and were messages or pleas directly to the gods, imploring them to intervene or strike out in vengeance against anyone who stole or committed a crime of any kind against the writer of the curse. Testy little tablets like these that begged gods like Jupiter and Apollo to wreck the chariots of opposing teams have been unearthed at several dig sites. There are lineage or cultural curses said to protect ancient structures and sacred lands, which is why disrespecting primitive lands and building on top of native burial grounds can often lead to very rude awakenings, to say the least. And certainly, you've heard, probably from me, about book curses and witch bottle curses. These lovely wicked curses are meant to guard the books from theft or ruin. And the bottles containing binding curses are meant to hinder or destroy from a distance the person the contents of the bottle and spell is directed at. But what I have next for you is a collection of items that, for one reason or perhaps a few, have been found to emit on their own powerful, harmful forces. They have within their very structure the intention and will to destroy the people who are merely holding them. Some might argue that these are the best kinds of curses. I've read. Let's begin with a lovely feminine force of fatal destruction, and possibly the oldest. I present to you the woman from Lem, spelled L-E-M-B. Created by human hands more than 5,000 years ago, this stylized stone fertility object is also known as the Lemba Lady and the Goddess of Death. A little over a foot tall, the wide and curvy female statue is nude and possibly pregnant, and has a featureless face and a flattish head. She, or it, is strikingly odd. In fact, I think that seeing only images of her elicits some deep and unknown emotion that will stir within you. One can only imagine what happens when you see her in person. Well, we needn't imagine too much, as the woman of Lem, since her discovery, is said to have wiped out dozens of lives of those who owned her. And she is pristinely preserved in modern times. Now, while bearing in mind there are those who claim her powers and body count to be a myth, I will happily list for you here the number of deaths she is rumored to have caused. The woman from Lem is said to have first been in the possession of a man simply known as Lord Elfont, whose entire family of seven all died within 6 years of the statue being owned by him. She then passed to Ivor Minucci, whose family didn't even last 4 years while the statue was in their possession. The same 4-year limit expired for Lord Thompson Noel and his family. And the doomed final owner is said to have been Sir Alan Biverbrook, whose wife and 2 young daughters died, causing his surviving sons to donate the statue to the Royal Scottish Museum, where the curator who welcomed the iffy effigy was said to have quickly fallen ill and died. This part of the Lady of Lem's story is definitely untrue, though, as she is housed safely behind glass in the Cyprus Museum in the island nation of Cyprus. It is thought that although her murderous mythos attracts many to the museum, many others choose to reject the rumors and see her only as the lovely graven goddess that she is. This next bedeviled item has an even hazier existence than the first, and I can sum up its horrible history for you quite quickly. This is the undying story of the Bezzano vase. The legend says that in 15th century Italy, a wedding was to take place. The night before the wedding, a gift box arrived for the bride-to-be. When she opened it, there was no note, and no person's name as the gifter. The only thing inside was a simple but pretty silver vase. The next day, the new bride failed to appear at her own wedding. Those sent to look for her found her lying dead, with the silver vase clutched to her bosom in her rigored arms. The deceased bride's earthly possessions were divvied up, and a relative was given the vase. Within only a day, this person, too, died, as did the next relative to whom the vase was passed to. When this happened a few more times, the vase was finally thought to be the common thread linking all of the deaths. The Bezzano vase was believed to be deeply cursed, and no one else would volunteer to take it. That's when someone, it's not known who, buried the vase in secret in an attempt to keep others safe. Hundreds of years later, in 1988, a man digging on his property struck the sterling vase with his shovel and dug it up. Inside was a warning, a five-word note that plainly read, "Beware, this vase brings death." But seeing that the vase was solid silver, the man put it up for auction, and it quickly sold to a pharmacist for roughly $2,500. 3 months later, the pharmacist died under mysterious circumstances. A doctor then purchased it next and suddenly died soon after he claimed it. Then an archaeologist who just had to have the vase to include in his display of similar artifacts died within months of owning it. When the vase was given to its next owner, possibly as part of the archaeologist's estate, they became gravely ill. The story goes that someone in his family threw the vase out the window, where it nearly struck a police officer. The officer then attempted to return the vase and handed it over, and with it, a fine for littering. The family paid the fine, but refused to take the vase. The officer then attempted to donate the shiny vessel to several museums, who all refused and warned the policeman that they knew it was a cursed object. This must have put fear into the policeman because he put the vase inside of a lead box and buried it in a cemetery. Is this story true? Well, here's the fun part. There's a picture of the vase to be found online. It's not the best picture, but it supposedly is the one and only Bezzano vase. I suppose now is as good a time as any to inform you. A message from the Midnight Library. I feel I should inform you in words formed into verses. There's things here that we're born to commit the weirdest curses. Some of our crystal doorknobs, when touched by human hands, We'll make some silly poor slobs, underwear filled with sand. There's supposedly some honey made by wicked bees that makes your nose so runny, it strings down to your knees. Upstairs there is a mirror that shows you looking awesome. But once you lean in nearer, you'll only see a possum. There's a weirdly cursing vacuum. Oh, I really hate to spoil it. But the curse involves a bathroom and a few years on the toilet. And of course, there is that hat rack with its hexing copper knobs. It brings invading pack rats bearing stinking thingamabobs. If you experience any weird, peculiar, or bizarre happenings or symptoms after handling, stepping on, lightly touching, having your clothing brush against, or even looking at, well, anything, here in the Midnight Library, we calmly advise you to seek out and visit your priest, counselor, advisor, mentor, fairy godmother, shaman, skilled visionary, or transient oracle. This will not help, but it will give you a false sense of power and comfort, deluding you enough to marginally endure your weighty curse and return to us. Assuredly, consultations with Dr. Bombay can be arranged by waiting patiently by the red obelisk in Phantom Forest. Your current wait time is approximately 3 months. Thank you for visiting the Midnight Library. Most certainly, the Lady from Lem's statue and the Bazzano vase are deadly fun. But I thought you would enjoy something with a bit more gravitas, so I've chosen some terribly troubled trinkets that you can not only dream of wearing, but that you can also visit to see if just being near them changes your luck. My lovelies, if the cursed gemstones from films such as Indiana Jones and The Mummy instantly capture your imagination, well, this is because the very idea of jinxed jewels comes from real life. Let me tell you the troublesome tales of the Delhi Purple Sapphire and the hopeless Hope Diamond. The Delhi Purple Sapphire first needs a gentle clarification. Because with all due respect to the powerful stone, it is most assuredly not a sapphire at all, but is instead a deep, rich gem of amethyst. Amethyst, which is generally coveted for its darkest purple colors, takes millions of years to form. And this large, faceted oval stone, secured inside of a peculiar silver mount, weighs in at 104 carats. The contentious story of the stone, also known as the Gem of Sorrow, is said to have been mined in India and placed in the sacred temple of Indra, the Hindu god of weather and war. During the 1857 uprising against oppression by the British, a cavalryman named Colonel Ferris removed the gem from the looted temple and returned home to England with it. Soon after, instead of living a hero's existence, his health failed and his finances collapsed. When the stone was passed down to his son, his luck soon took a downward turn, as did his health, which left him poverty-stricken. By 1890, The lustrous violet jewel was given to Edward Heron Allen, a man of many talents and interests in science, history, music, and literature. It is believed that it was he who had the stone mounted in its unusual setting. After a series of mishaps and unfortunate events in his own life, and knowing of the stone's history, Heron Allen began to suspect that the gem was cursed. He reluctantly loaned it to a singer to wear for the sake of its beauty. She promptly lost her voice and returned the jewel to him. With the arrival of more misfortunes in his work and life, Edward Heron Allen became so convinced that the stone was the reason, he heaved it into the Regent's Canal to be rid of it for good. But just a few months later, the canal was dredged, and the shining gem was found and delivered to a local jeweler for appraisal. The jeweler instantly recognized it as the stone he had set and returned it to Mr. Heron Allen. Stunned and frightened to have the gem returned to him, he was said to have stuffed the daunting jewel, along with protective charms and a note, into 7 boxes and had it locked away in a safe at his bank, leaving strict instructions that it should not be opened until after his death. This seems to have helped, as he lived many more years, but did pass away in 1944. When his daughter inherited the Delhi Sapphire, she must have believed her father's warning because she quickly donated the stone to the British Natural History Museum, where, oddly, it was just tucked away and forgotten about until 1972. It was then that Peter Tandy removed the gem from its careful wrapping and discovered a handwritten note that read, "Whoever opens this box, do whatever you want with this. My advice, however, is to throw it into the sea." The mysterious, beautiful, and mislabeled Delhi Sapphire remains on display to the public in London's Natural History Museum. Up to this point, my dear guest, I want to make it clear to you that all of the previously spoken about hexing and vexing objects come with a caveat, because all of them have hazy histories and dubious details. This caveat does not apply to our next cursed commodity, the Hope Diamond. Since 1958, well over 100 million people have stood in line to have their fleeting moment with only a stout sheet of glass between them and the mysterious Hope Diamond. Honestly, this entire reading could have solely been about the Hope Diamond, as it has a far-reaching and rich history, which I will now summarize for you. The stunning indigo-blue diamond was mined in India in the mid-1660s and brought back by an explorer named Jean-Baptiste Tavernier, who sold it and several other rare gems to King Louis XIV in 1669. It weighed approximately 115 carats at that time. The king, known as the Sun King, had the gem cut to make it more symmetrical and to emphasize its brilliance. The 2-year-long process reduced the diamond down to a 69-carat heart-shaped diamond, alternatively known as the French blue. The gem was not worn, but strangely, was affixed into a gold setting and, quote, mounted on a stick. It served simply as a unique bauble that was part of the king's cabinet of curiosities, kept at the Palace of Versailles. The gleaming gem later became repurposed by Louis's great-grandson, Louis XV, as a royal lapel badge, a symbol of the knighthood of the Order of the Golden Fleece, and featured a solid gold pendant in the shape of a skinned lamb's fleece dangling from the bottom of it. Classy. In 1791, Louis XVI was captured along with Marie Antoinette as they tried to flee France during the Revolution, but were executed instead. And much of their extravagant belongings, including the Hope Diamond, were then put on display in special cases with guards all around them for the public to peek at. It is not believed that Marie Antoinette, despite her bad luck, ever wore the Hope Diamond. I know. Let's get to the good stuff. I agree. Here's a quote from the Washington Post in 1908. "Remarkable jewel of hoodoo, Hope Diamond has brought trouble to all who have owned it. Deep behind the double-locked doors hides the Hope Diamond. Snug and secure from time, lock, and bolt, it rests in its cotton-wool nest under many wrappings, in the great vault of the great house of Frankel. Yet not all the locks and bolts and doors ever made by man can ward off its baleful power, or screen from its venom those against whom its malign force may be directed." So, there are at least 25 people who owned or handled the French Blue or Hope Diamond, who met with absolutely terrible fates. I have a shortened list for you. Here we go. The man who started it all, Jean-Baptiste Tavernier. There's a delicious rumor that he didn't come by the precious stone as innocently as originally thought, but had instead, and here's that adventure movie MacGuffin trope, that he had prized the blazing blue gem out of the head of a Hindu statue, that it was one of its eyes. Tavernier was said to have later fallen ill, died, and his body was ravaged and eaten by a pack of wolves, which I'm told can be an honorable death. Isn't that so, Mr. Darling?
Certainly, madam.
The first king to own the diamond, Louis XIV, rotted to death from gangrene, and all but one of his children died in childhood. A man named Nicolas Fouquet was permitted to wear the lustrous jewel for just a few hours for a special occasion. The king then inexplicably turned on him, had him banished from France, and later forced him to a sentence of life in prison. Fouquet has long been rumored to be the mysterious man in the iron mask. King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, who definitely owned the glittering gem, were both beheaded. But before this, a member of Marie Antoinette's court, her closest companion, Marie Louise, Princess de Lamballe, who would have handled and looked after the monarch's treasury of jewels, was brutally murdered by the angry crowd during the resistance. She was beaten, decapitated, ripped apart, and her head was impaled on a tall pole and paraded in Marie Antoinette's prison window. Royal jeweler Wilhelm Fals, who was ordered to cut the famed diamond down to the still large 45-carat gem surrounded by enormous white diamonds that we see today, was attacked and killed by his own son, who then stole the diamond. His son later took his own life. Simon Mancherides, a wealthy Greek merchant who briefly owned the stone, was legendarily said to have driven his car off a cliff, with his family included. A famous Washington socialite, Evelyn Walsh McLean, who briefly owned the diamond, lived. But her daughter died from an overdose of drugs, her son was killed in a violent car crash, and her husband went insane and was institutionalized, ending their happy marriage. Even a simple civilian courier, James Todd, who dutifully delivered the dazzling gem to its home in the Smithsonian National Museum of History in 1958, was later hit by a speeding truck. His house burned down, and his wife and dog perished. The 1908 article that began the famous list features many more atrocities that befell others who owned or had dealings with the Hope Diamond. It lists hangings, accidents, imprisonment, financial ruin, illnesses, insanity, and several more murders. The exquisite Hope Diamond, valued between $250 million and $350 million, is housed in the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C., where it is permanently on display in a very securely locked case on a rotating pedestal under strategic bright lights. It's just innocently twinkling away. If you visit it and feel well enough to comment, please do. Now, please gather your goods and get up on your pins, lovelies, and handsome Mr. Darling will see you out. Do be careful of what you touch or almost touch, or don't. I'm not the boss of you. Good night, my dear guests. Good night.
Well, the pack rats have descended upon the sheriff's son in horrific fashion.
Good. Irma in the Village Dare program. How ridiculous. She's already enrolled in the Midnight Library's Dare program.
Oh, right. Theirs is Drug Abuse Resistance Education. What's ours again?
Demons Against Religious Exorcism, darling.
Of course.
This message is for you, my dear guest. It's important to me that you know that you are welcome and valued here. Why? Because I know that you are a real person. And I'd like you to know
that in spite of what you may hear in the village, that I am a real person too. I am not an AI-generated thing, pieced together by robbing the work of others and presented by a soulless algorithm, meant to spew a random flood of content at you that only masquerades as quality entertainment. I choose the subjects I think you'll like. I diligently research the topics, using only reputable books and sites. I alone write every single word you hear. I choose each piece of music and every eerie fun sound. I am the Midnight Library. I am the Reading Room. I am every character. I am the Broom and Fang Pub, the fog that floats in the graveyard, and every Lady Gravedigger. And I am honored that you enjoy what I create. So I will ask you to support the Midnight Library, as many of my beloved friends do. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary, and I'll meet you there. Thank you.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.